What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 21 of Value Town. I'm your host, Chanman V, and joining me as always is my co-host, Trump. What's up, Trump? Back from all your travels and your adventures.
Hello, hello.
So how is everything, man? Good?
Got a bit of a stomach ache, so I'm toughening it out for you.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate that, man. Definitely a baller. For sure. And our guest today, again, is Mr. Strife Crow here, fresh off his win from Seat Story Cup. Congrats on that, man.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to be here.
Nice to be $8,000 richer, right? Actually, Trump, too. Trump, actually, it's a value town, I think, what, netted $10,000, I think, from Seat Story. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Good stuff. Or liquid value. I guess. Did I say value town or liquid value? Yeah, liquid value. But pretty cool. So today's show, we got some cool topics planned. We're going to talk about the official launch of Hearthstone. Kind of snuck up on me, at least, this week, which is really, really cool. And we'll talk about some of the changes in the patch. Of course, Peggle Tank. Of course, you guys know the changes. And we'll get these guys' perspective on it. And we'll also talk about the decks that they ran at Seat Story. Get a good look at it. Some of these decks made a lot of news because of just some really cool things that happened at the tournament. We'll get a chance to get them to, I guess, analyze, explain the decks, that sort of thing. And then at the end, we'll do the typical Q&A that we always do, where you guys get the chance to ask your questions, the ones posted in the Reddit thread, which is right here. We'll go with the top upvoted ones first and kind of work our way down from there. So be sure to get yours in there and be sure to upvote all the ones that you want to be asked on the show. So all right, guys, let's talk about the Hearthstone launch. The official launch happened 2 days ago, I believe. And, well, first off, did you guys even know it was going to get launched 2 days ago? Like, I didn't know.
Yeah. I read it, I guess, 2 days ago, and it says Hearthstone is now live, and I didn't know. I thought this patch was just supposed to be some fixes to, like, Peggle and Tinkermaster.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And then suddenly it says it's launched, so that's cool, but I think they could have made a bigger deal of it.
Yeah, I thought they were going to do like a, I don't know, like a mini party or something like that, you know? But, you know, like, I remember the StarCraft 2 one happening earlier last year, and it was, you know, a super big event. And I know Hearthstone wasn't expected to be a big event, but I think at this point it's pretty clear that Hearthstone is kind of a big deal. So, yeah, I was a little surprised. Trump, what do you think? Hearthstone launched. Mean anything?
They should have put more fireworks into it.
Yeah. So maybe, I don't know, maybe when they're not going to come out with, like, expansions to Hearthstone, I don't think. I mean, if they do, it's going to be, like, a year or two from now. So maybe the next one, they'll do something a lot bigger. But one thing I did see is that the mobile version, at least they showed it off at some Chinese conference, or some conference in China that happened recently. It's kind of on Reddit right now. So pretty excited. Sounds like that's going to be launched fairly soon. Would you guys play on your mobile device more, or do you think you'd still be playing on PCs mostly?
Well, I'd play on PC mostly since I'm usually on my computer, but it's a good feature that I would definitely use as well. And I think that there's, you know, other people, a lot of other people would probably play more on the tablets and stuff since a lot of people are more into, like, the mobile stuff. You know, they're not always sitting in front of the computer like me, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Another thing about the Hearthstone launch, too, is that I know that the Hearthstone launch was kind of, the first step to a lot of the new changes that, you know, they've been talking about for the last, you know, month or so, meaning, like, the spectator mode and all that stuff. So what gets me excited about the launch, at least, is I know that the next step is going to be that stuff, and can't wait for that. Man, spectator mode. That will make my life a lot easier with some of the other things I'm doing. So can't wait for that. So let's talk about the patch changes. So that's one of the things, obviously, part of this launch. And some of the things that we're seeing, just more aesthetic things, are the animations. You kind of see cards that have, you know, like the totems, like this kind of ghost totem coming down on the ground, and then all of a sudden it kind of shows up. So little cool aesthetic things like that. But I think the biggest patch change everybody wants to hear about is really the Nat Peggle and Tinkermaster. So, Trump, let me get your thoughts on... Let's start with Nat Peggle. What do you think of the Nat Peggle change?
Nat Peggle change is welcomed. I think it's a fair card now. Although I am not running it in any of my decks. Time will tell on how good it is still.
Okay, how much worse do you think it is now?
Like, it's substantially worse.
Okay.
Losing like half a card is so much value.
Mm-hmm. All right, Strife, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that, basically. I haven't been using NatPig on my decks anymore, but I think it's pretty fair now. You know, you could use NatPiggle if you wanted the effect in your deck, but it's not like an auto include in every deck anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I agree with Trump what he said. Basically, it's like it's nerfed by half a card because, you know, NatPiggle will never die in your turn since that's impossible. So, you know, whenever your opponent decides to kill it, he's going to kill it on that turn. So, like, pretty much NatPiggle is just always going to draw half a card less every game. And, okay. I mean, if he ever dies, that is. So that's a pretty big nerf, like half a card. Like, you know, that's pretty much worth, I don't know, that's a big change. So,
I mean, there were some suggestions of changing that Piggle to a 0-3. You know, I think some of the community was suggesting that before this change. And, I mean, I think this change is pretty cool, but do you think the 0-3 change would have been any better or worse than this current
one? Well, what I think is this change is more elegant. But it's a little bit bigger nerf. The reason why I say it's more elegant is because the change right now, how it is it really further incentivizes people to be able to kill NatPiggle with creatures. Say, you know, before, if they coin out Piggle and you don't have a one drop, it's pretty hard for you to drop creatures since it's pretty risky and it takes, you know, forever. But now with it not drawing until the beginning of their turn, mm-hmm. effectively you have like some more time. You know, you have like basically like one more turn, I guess, on your turn.
Yeah.
So you don't have to deal with it right away as much. You know, you can react a little bit slower. The 0-3 change is probably a smaller change than that Pickle. Like, it'd be less of a nerf, but I think this change is more elegant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a bigger nerf as well, so I don't know.
Okay.
It is a pretty big nerf, but.
Yeah, I can... Oh, go ahead, Trump. You're going to say something?
Oh, I mean, both suggestions would be pretty big nerfs.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I can't see it. I can maybe see it still being run in control decks, but, man, anti-aggro decks, there's no way. I don't think anybody would be running Piggle in that. Even though, I mean, people probably weren't even running it to begin with these days. But, all right, let's talk about the Tinkmaster change. Trump, thoughts on that?
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that they also buffed it up to a 3-3. So now it's more of a, it's not a funsies card, but it's sort of a funsies card. And you can actually play it in some very specific circumstances, just like the old Tinkmaster. Like, they play one big guy and you play your Tinkmaster.
Does Tinkmaster have a chance of, cheaping itself? Because
no,
this is another, this other mini. Okay.
Yeah, it can't tank itself. I mean, it can't transform itself.
Yeah.
But what's your thoughts on it, Shrek?
Honestly, I'm under the impression that Tinkmaster is more of like a casual card, like a Timmy card,
mm-hmm.
like not really a competitive card anymore. And that's fine. Like, that kind of effect, it's you know, a lot of people just wanted it removed from the competitive scene, anyways.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably just that's what they got. Like, it's more of like, it's kind of like a card like Goblin Mechatork, you know. Like, no one really uses it in top ladder or a competitive scene. I think that's going to be the same for Tinkmaster now. But you know, it's a really fun card, and a lot of players like that stuff, and they're going to use it still. And you know, Tinkmaster kind of catered to that kind of. To that kind of player to begin with in the first place. It's just, it was so strong that even competitive players were using it as well.
Do you think it was originally planned to be a funsy card?
I kind of think so, maybe, but I don't know.
That was kind of my first impression of it when I first saw it. But then, you know, obviously quickly people figured out an applicable way of using it in competitive, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 3-3 for 3, so... That's not exactly bad, like, just straight up. But again, that's not really good enough to just have a 3-3 for 3. And I don't know, it's pretty hard to reliably get anything because you can't even target it. Yeah, so,
yeah, Tickmaster was never. I mean, it was situational for sure, but you never played it in a situation where it would, you know, voluntarily, unless you were just completely desperate, put you in a worse situation. And yeah, exactly. In this case, I mean, especially converting your own minion, right? You would never convert your own, like, your 3-3 and try to convert it, you know, with the Tink Master. That would never happen, right? But in this particular case, I mean, you can have very, very bad things happen to you. So, yeah, I think it's completely, like, not viable.
Well, if
anymore. You
do go for the old strat of how some people play Tink Master, which is only play it when it's, like, really, like you know, say on Ragnaros or in really good situations where even the downside of it would still be all right, then a lot, I think at this point, you just never play Tink Master the whole game, most of the game. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Like, you can't really do that strategy anymore. You gotta hope now.
Yeah.
Because it's just too specific that if you only wait for, like, the perfect situations, you're pretty much, it's never gonna happen anymore, I think, so.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the decks that might be really, like, greatly affected by it. That was in the meta, you know, maybe a few days ago before the patch. Trump, what decks, in your opinion, do you think will be highly, highly affected by it? Because some classes don't have any kind of, you know, transformation type of spells like Hex and Polymorph, right? And I think Tink has kind of been a filler for those classes. So what are your thoughts?
I agree. I mean, it turns out that I believe every single deck I brought to the Seed Story tournament had both cards in it. Tinkmaster and Nat Pagel.
Okay.
So it affects all of my decks. It affects those with limited removal the most. For example, the Druid, Force Strife Crow.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's no single card that will probably function the same, right? I mean, will people run Naturalize now? I mean, that sort of thing?
No, I doubt that effect is that important to begin with.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, you don't have to have, even if there's no Tink Master, I doubt people will run Naturalize. So.
Yeah. I guess another class, too, I can think of is maybe Paladin. I mean, Paladin doesn't have wonderful removal either. So it'll be interesting to see. But it's probably going to take at least several card rework, right, to kind of, I think, make up for that? Or do you think it's not that big a deal for these decks?
I don't think
it's
that
sort of a big deal.
Okay, so Trump.
There's a lot of cards that just went up in goodness, like Tyrion and Karen and Sylvanas.
Yeah, so is Sylvanas going to be back? Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, and Deathwing.
Yes, Deathwing. Maybe we'll see some big game Hunter back in the meta too. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of like a replacement on some creatures if you really need that effect.
Yeah.
It's a much better replacement against, like, Rag than, say, Naturalizes, that's for sure.
Yeah. Just throwing out Naturalize, given that it was a Druid card. But, yeah, Naturalizes, I think, never been a great value card. Okay, so that's kind of cool. Any other... There really were no other updates, right? Just to the cards themselves.
No, those were the only balance changes.
Yeah. I still see a few bugs, I have to say, which, I haven't seen the stacking bug at all. Have you guys run into the stacking bug? The card stacking bug?
Oh, I personally haven't seen it.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one, but still the floating things still happen from time to time, so hopefully those will be hashed out soon. But man, that card stacking thing at least is gone. I haven't seen the swapping too, just like the Argus swapping, that kind of thing. So I think those are all good, and yeah, can't wait to see some more competitive matches without Tink and Pagel now. But let's move on. Let's talk about both of your decks at Seed Story. Obviously, both, you know, you guys finished first and third at the event, and had some wonderful success and some great matches. I really enjoyed watching. I watched quite a bit of it, actually, and figured it'd be great to talk about these decks with you. So I'm going to start out with Strife's decks and kind of have all four of them here. And what's funny is, for those of you who didn't watch Seed Story, each of the players had four decks that they brought to the tournament. And they had this concept of a secret deck that they could, you know, obviously keep secret, so none of the players knew what they were. And they could break it out during, I think, one match the entire tournament. Or one, just at some point in the entire tournament. They can only do it one time. And If you, as you can see here, Strife only has 4 decks listed here. So what does that mean, Strife? Like, where's your secret deck?
Well, my secret deck was my Druid deck, except...
It's Druid deck times 2.
I just played it twice, yeah.
Yeah, and you were allowed to do that. You were allowed to literally pick any deck you wanted and you know, just have that be the additional deck you could run. So Strife picked his Druid deck twice, man. That's confidence.
It might have been good to pick like another Warlock, because you know how Murloc and Giants play so differently, and people mulligan against it differently. So that's what Nimsh did, and I think that was really smart as well.
Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, let's talk about some of these decks then. We've talked about the Druid and the Shaman deck, I think, in past episodes. Unless you changed it. Did you change it up at all?
Yes.
Oh, actually, well, yeah. It's actually pretty different than the ones that you had before. So, The Druid deck... I think the only... the Druid deck's actually quite different, too, with the Argent and the Black Knight at the end. And then no Rag. So, yeah, let's go ahead. Let's just talk about them all. So let's start out with the Druid deck. Talk to me about some of the changes you made there. One less defender.
I didn't make... I just copied all my decks in this tournament from Reddit, from Ghost Eclipse, that Ignite one. I copied all his decks. Before the tournament, I didn't really play much Hearthstone in 2 weeks. So I was a little bit busy, and I wasn't too confident in like making all 4 decks, as well as I thought maybe the meta would change or the decks would get better. Mm-hmm. While I haven't played much in 2 weeks, so I saw that this is an open tournament. Like, I think that open tournaments are like some of the most brutal experiences. Like, it's very hard to do good in open tournaments because of just the amount of players there are. And also I saw that he was actually consistently placing very high in open tournaments. So I thought that took a very good deck list and really good play as well. So I was I actually looked over the decks that I copied, and I kind of agreed with how they were, they're all made, and like how I guess they were progressing from the metagame. So I just took them all, put Pagel in like 3 of them because Pagel was banned in that tournament, and then just played it.
Okay. Compare the Druid one to your previous one, because it's one less Argus. I see a Drake there now and 2 Argents. I mean, the Argents I think are the biggest change from what you had.
Yeah, well, it's really aggressive. It has, I guess, 1 Drake instead of 2, and also has Argent Commander as well, and no card above 7 mana, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty good, especially with how I like to play. I like to like go for the face a lot. Even if I have like say a Yeti versus like a 2/3, a lot of times I just won't trade and hit him in the face. Mm-hmm. It really pressures life heavily, I guess. One change I really liked was how it was only using 1 Argus, which is kind of weird for a Watcher deck, but like our Ancient Watcher of this deck is kind of more used for a beatdown roll, I guess, a lot of times. Like, yeah. Say, instead of Defender Argusing it, you have just 2 Keepers as well, so you're more playing a Stunt and hit him for 4 as well, so.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Trump, any thoughts on his Druid deck?
Yeah, part of the thing that I've been looking into Druid is whether or not you need the 6 Ancient Watcher activations. And I've toyed with removing 1 Defender also. I wasn't brave enough to make that shot there in my deck.
You have an Earthen too in there.
Yeah, well, like I said, I literally copied it on Blind Faith, and I didn't want to make... People that make the decks have a good reason why, and I don't... Unless I play them a lot, I'm not confident in making like changes to the decks I copy from people.
Yeah.
So I just took it on faith on the Earthen. But I think it worked out fine, and especially with only 1 Defender of Argus,
yeah.
Maybe you can have like another Earthen as well. And Earthen's a card where I've had Druid for a long time. It's just I've never had it in a Watcher deck. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you do take out some of the 6 Watcher activators, then you can fit in some other stuff like Earthen.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. I mean, you do bring up a, you know, something or just a general thing that happens in these card games where deck building and actual deck playing is like are 2 separate things, right? And sometimes, you know, it kind of comes together and you kind of do both. But again, like, I think if you're not, if you haven't gotten a chance to play and practice a lot with,
yeah, exactly. Tweaks, you certainly don't have to make your own decks. You can certainly copy decks from from people as well. And I mean, all the time. That's generally a better idea, honestly, because it's likely that the people that worked on the other decks might have a little bit more experience. You know, so.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's move on to the Shaman deck, and this one's interesting. It's got one Yeti in it. It's got a Pyromancer in it. I mean, it's got a lot of... Well, it's got some singletons in it. And pretty different than the one that you had before. So talk to us about this. What do you think the strengths were with this compared to maybe some of the other Shaman decks that are being run with, you know, Alkir and that sort of thing?
I think it's pretty consistent. Like, it has... I like how it has a four drop, like it has a Yeti, or you can like a straight four drop, not like not just a Defender of Argus. Mm-hmm. So you actually sometimes have a strong four mana play. But other than that, yeah, it has like no Wind Fury. Only had one Gadgetzan, which is kind of cool because those cards are like really combo heavy, and it's really basically skimping on like combo potential for consistency, basically.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the style here. Like, it's just very, it's really like standard Shaman, I guess.
It's kind of a Shaman that you would have seen probably, I don't know, 4 months ago, 3 months ago, is that type of thing? But you don't think so, Trump?
I don't know if you would have saw it.
It's generally the same-ish. I wouldn't, yeah.
Okay.
It's got, like, probably about 20 plus on a glance Shaman cards in it, so it's about standard.
Okay. All right, so let's move on. We can talk about the Warrior deck, and I believe the Warrior deck... Oh, no, I think you guys have a few cards that are different in both of your Warrior decks, but talk about this deck. I've played decks really similar to this quite a bit, but I want to get your thoughts on strengths, that sort of thing. Strife.
Well, I think it's just a pretty standard Warrior control deck, I guess. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to tune it a little bit against aggro, say Hunter and Warlock aggro. So I think I have a cleave in it. My original plan was for Warrior to be a really good counter to like those aggro decks, and I was even thinking of removing some amount of executes so that, you know, it'd have a better matchup against those. But mm-hmm. I decided just to still keep the two executes and try to make it as good as possible still against aggro. I don't know if it worked out. I guess it kind of worked out. But, yeah, I doesn't really have... I guess it doesn't have Karn in this deck, and I guess I don't have Baron Geddon. I don't know if that's good or bad, because, like I said, I just copied the deck. But I guess that's what it was going for. I mean, it has two Yetis, so it's a little bit faster.
Yeah, the two Yetis are definitely the kind of the nuance. There's some that have the Yetis, some that don't. Another card, too, is Onyxia. And I was seeing, I think Monk ran Onyxia, too, right? So talk to me about Onyxia.
Yeah, Monk was talking to me about it. He basically just said he tested a lot of Warrior, and he won him some games where he wouldn't have won with, you know, Ysir or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I just put it in. I don't know how... I guess I never really got to play it, but, you know, so I don't really know how.
You won games before you even had to play it, man.
<That's nice. laughs> Or a loss with it before I had to play
it. Trump, what are your thoughts on Onyxia?
My thoughts are that it's a pretty good card. I actually thought you had to run either Ysir or Onyxia, but apparently Strife went and ran both, which is really good in the late game.
Yeah, because there's no Alex Ross in this deck for some reason.
Oh, that's right. No, yeah. Alex.
Yeah, I think so you run Alex, though, Trump, I believe, right?
So. Right.
Alex seems... Yeah, I mean, any thoughts on that, Trife? I mean, can you...
I guess it's a little bit more aggressive with the Yetis and stuff like that, so you're more likely to do damage early. Like, Alex Strauss is really good if in a situation where you're never doing damage early so that you can always get the 15 damage on them when you do it.
Okay.
Like, because Alex Strauss effectively makes any early damage you do useless, pretty much. So with this deck, as you add in like more Yetis, I guess it's not as important. But I don't know exactly why there's no Alex Strauss in this deck. I don't know what the original creator of this deck thought when he was making it, so I don't know. That's just my thoughts on it. And I don't really think that Alex Strahd is like you have to have it in Warrior. I mean, it the effect is really strong, but it's mostly
I like
strong.
That reasoning a lot.
It's mostly strong when you get the 15 damage.
Yeah, it just seems really again. If minus the Yetis, it just seems like you know most of the Warrior stuff is about removal or building up armor. I mean, you have really
you have Frolings
weak
as well. So.
Yeah, Frolings can scale for sure, but armor smiths and things like that are definitely not going to be doing a ton of damage. So it's nice to have the Alex Strahd at 15 there. Okay, let's move on to the Warlock deck, and looks like pretty much your standard handlock here. I'm trying to see if there's anything that stands out that's different. I mean, the extra Shadow Flame, but that's a lot of people have been doing
standard.
That recently.
I think that's actually more standard than not, that too. Like, it's more normal. Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to play handlock just because I thought that a lot of decks have a pretty bad matchup against it, especially decks like the Zoo deck, where they're pretty much like designed to be really strong against control decks that are trying to remove all their creatures, like Warriors, and maybe even Druid and stuff. But against control decks that are trying to just do their own thing, like do something stronger, like a handlock, where you know you don't really care about removing their creatures. It's more about you want to just make gigantic creatures of your own and take over the game with like that taunting them or something. Mm-hmm. It has a really good matchup against that. And also, some of my control decks are having. Or slower decks are also having a hard time against handlock, so I just wanted to run it because I thought that a lot of people would be playing the same decks. Stuff like, I think Warrior Control and maybe even Druid. Like, I don't think they have great matchups against handlock either. So, the biggest weakness of handlock is Hunter, and it has. I think it's not very good against Hunter, but yeah.
Okay. Any comments, Trump, on handlock? I mean. Again, it's pretty much the standard one. Or any ideas that you have for handlock that you've been thinking about?
I think it was well said, and I think handlock was an excellent choice to bring into the tournament. Mm-hmm.
I think, interesting enough, I don't think I ever lost a game with handlock the whole tournament. I think I went 5-0.
Nice.
I think that was actually my best day.
Now we're just going to see everybody running handlock today on the ladder after hearing that. But okay, let's take a look at let's
even better now that Pink Master is nerfed.
I know, right? That's huge, actually. So I'm sure we'll be seeing more giant decks in general, not just Handlock.
If everyone decides that BGH is what they're playing,
that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen, man.
Then that's not good.
It's funny how the meta's been moving, and you know, Black Knight too, right? Black Knight's been gone for a while, and I've been starting to run it too this season some more again, and it's like effective, especially with like handlock and those kind of things. Not so much against Zoo and aggro and that kind of stuff, but it might start to come back some more too.
It helps the matchup Druid versus handlock a lot, since they always taunt their giants or that Twilight Drake, like a 4/10, and you have to spend so much to get through. Black Knight kind of really punishes them for it.
Yeah. Very, very true. Okay, Trump, your decks. And Trump has 5 decks, so his secret deck obviously was not a repeat of any of the others. So which one was your secret deck, Trump, for those of you that didn't watch the Seat Story Cup?
Well, the secret deck is the Mage deck.
Yes, the infamous Mage deck. The Hungry Crab Mage deck, which we'll get to, I guess, last year. But first off, Trump, what did you think of the format? Did you like the whole secret deck? I didn't really get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, of course I like the format. Let me run Angry Crab in a deck.
No, it's cool. It's cool. It's, you know, it's pretty creative, and I hope more events do, you know, neat little twists like that to allow you to, I don't know, just allow people to do kind of cool, funny, entertaining things like that too. Even though they're effective, they're entertaining, yet they're still effective, which is awesome. All right, so let's get into your Rogue deck. I'm going to talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, sure. Rogue wasn't run too much in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Monk and I think were the two that ran it.
Savages ran a Miracle Rogue as his secret, but not the type of rogues you guys ran, which is like a mid-range rogue.
Yeah.
My reasoning for running Rogue, and this hadn't been a deck that I'd practiced too much, but I practiced it like for a few days just before the tournament started.
Okay.
Is because I needed something that would beat Shaman, and I figured a lot of people would run Shaman. So, as it turns out, a lot of the Doggy House people thought that Shaman beats Rogue, but Thankfully, through bouncing some ideas off of Liquid Value, I was convinced that Rogue had a very favorable matchup against Shaman. And it turned out it was pretty good.
Yeah, explain that.
I think it was 0%. Yeah, I don't think Shaman ever won against Rogue.
Explain the logic that this particular Rogue deck has an advantage over Shaman.
Boy, it's really hard to actually explain.
I know, right?
It's similar to the same reason why aggro decks tend to be good against Shaman. It beats them down really fast. The totems can be dealt with fairly easily. Mm-hmm. You've got the Loot Hoarder. It's all right. Like, they've got Earthshock, but for the most part, if they don't have Earthshock, it's really good. They can't do one damage to it.
What about Argent Squire? Argent Squire.
Oh, Argent Squire is really good in this deck. Okay. Might be the best card, just because of the Cold Blood.
Okay, cool.
As it turns out, it's hard to explain why it's good against Shaman, or perhaps I just don't have the experience to explain why, but it keeps up the pressure and manages to clear their board, and that's important against Shaman, since they tend to need to have a bunch of totems out and then buff their stuff. If you manage to keep their stuff clean, which the Rogue manages to do very early, mm-hmm. then you're in a good spot.
Yeah, I can see this deck just every turn basically putting pressure on the board, while the Shaman will have to respond with Overlord at some point, right? And then I think it would kind of get a little bit behind and maybe try to keep up and that sort of thing. Strife, what do you think? Why do you think the Rogue is probably better in this situation?
Well, I think that Rogue, I mean, basically some of the worst games I've ever had as Shaman versus anything is when a Rogue coined out Scrubs and I just couldn't kill it. Mm-hmm. But this deck doesn't have Scrubs, but it's the same concept. Basically, the Shaman playstyle is a playstyle of like having early game is like tons of removal plus like they don't really have a lot of creatures to drop. They just have, like, you know, their low mana stuff like Lightning Bolt and Stormforge Axe, Urshaw. Yep. They're all, like, removal, and then if the other guy doesn't have anything to remove, they just make totems. The rogue creatures that this deck uses are all really, like, sticky, and it's not really efficient to remove. And honestly, it's not efficient for Shaman to remove almost any creature. It's just the fact that they usually have enough. But, you know, stuff like Squire, Harvest Golem, I don't know if it has it, Loot Hoarder, like, you can't really remove them easily, or you generally can't remove them easily, you know? Like, you have to spend a spell to, maybe even two spells for a lot of them to kill them. Or, in the Loot Hoarder's case, you know, maybe one card, but they're going to draw a card on you. Also, the fact that their hero power is so good against yours a lot of times to take out, like, it's one of the only hero powers that can kind of keep up with Shaman hero power, like Mage, for example, or Druid. Most of the times you make 0/2 totems, they're not going to kill it, but the Rogue one, it kind of, like, saves over two turns, so you can actually take out, like, Taunt totems or the other totem. Since the Rogue hero power, the weakness is usually the other, the weakness, even though it does 2 damage, is that you take twice the amount of damage. You know what I mean? Whereas the Mage one doesn't take any damage. But since the totems don't fight back anyways, they're like 0/2 or 1/1, that's not a big deal.
Gotcha.
And also, Rogue just has efficient removal as well. And this kind of Rogue, where you're just progressing into the 4-6 mana cards with, like, really really mid-rangey creatures, is a really good style. Like, Shaman can beat some of the really aggro decks that rely on just, like, swarming the board, and then they die to, like, Lightning Storm or Power Mance or anything. It's just the Rogue isn't really swarming the board. It's more like making, like, a couple of really sticky minions, and then transitioning into the mid-game as well, like, to around the same power Shaman. So they're usually ahead from the beginning, and the Shaman can't really catch up, and, you know, they're not all in like some of the other aggro decks.
Yeah. Two particular cards, Trump, I wanted to ask you about in this is King Mukla and Captain Greenskin. Two cards I think are, you know, really, really fun. Mukla can be situational at times, but talk to me how Mukla actually works in this deck, where sometimes a lot of decks doesn't work in.
Sure, I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
So King Mukla is a decision to make the Rogue better against control. It really sucks against aggro, and oftentimes against aggro matchups, I had to hold the King Mukla in my hand in the late game. But when you're up against control and you're constantly clearing their stuff and you have a lead, then there's no better way to punish them than having a 3-mana 5/5. As for Captain Greenskin, I just think it's really valuable, and I would consider running it in every rogue deck. It's sort of fits the role of a third Azure Drake, and rogues really need the extra value, so to say. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a 5/4 Azure Drake plus you immediately draw and play upgrade, and you always have a weapon, almost always.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
Yeah, especially Deadly Poisoned, too. I mean, you could definitely get another swing with a Deadly Poisoned weapon, which would be great. Yeah, Captain Greenskin, I've tried in the Warrior deck, too. I think it's actually a pretty cool card, and value-wise it's great, like you were saying. So I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing it some more. So it was really cool to see you run it actually in a rogue deck. That was cool. Let's see, any other cards here we're talking about?
I'll mention that there's a reason why Leroy isn't here. It's okay. More of a value deck as opposed to a rushdown deck. Like, even the Cold Blood can usually just be done as 4 damage if you have a minion on the board.
Yeah.
So a lot of the mentality is having a lot of value cards like Captain Greenskin, Azure Drake, Cairn, etc.
Okay, cool. Your Shaman deck, it actually looks kind of like, well, maybe there's like maybe 3 cards to 4 cards different than Strife's. I think Strife, you had a Pyromancer in yours, I believe.
Yeah,
is that right? Yeah, that was kind of interesting. But you have the Gadgetzan in this one too, Trump, and looks like you have Alkir, but he didn't. I think yours topped up at 6, right, Strife?
With the
Fire Elementals. So pretty close, but how would you describe the style of this one, Trump?
This deck is tilted more towards anti-control, whereas Strife's is a bit more anti-aggro. The big changes are this has an extra Flame Tongue Totem instead of Pyromancer. It doesn't have a Yeti, and it doesn't have a second Defender of Argus. And instead, it has Alakir, and what is that final card which is different? I'm not entirely sure, but one other card.
I think there's one less Drake. You might have had one less Drake, Strife. Is it a singleton? I can look. Hold on.
He had 2 Drakes also.
Oh, yeah, he had 2 Drakes.
And also he had a Lava Burst.
Oh, he had one Yeti. He had one Yeti, too.
Right. So there's like 4 to 5 cards, and that actually makes a big difference because this is a lot better against... I would argue it's a lot better against control, and I would definitely see Strife Crows as much better against aggro.
Okay.
And that's just a deck-building decision.
Right. Okay, great. Let's see, moving on to the Druid deck. This is pretty much what the Strife Crow Druid deck was that everybody knows. I guess there's a Drake in there. I don't remember there being a Drake in there for... I'm trying to see which card it was. What's the Drake
I'll actually just credit Strife Crow for this deck. I went to his stream, and I looked at his Druid list. I was like, same as always. Looks good.
All right. Here you go.
And it's something I've practiced a lot. It's a very solid control style. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think everybody would agree with you there. It's just one of the most solid decks we have in the metagame. It has been for a while now. Okay, Trump's Warrior deck. And we mentioned your Warrior deck and maybe a little bit of the differences before. But getting a chance to look at it now, it looks like... we talked about Alexstrasza being different. And you have Baron Geddon too. So talk to us a little bit about Baron Geddon and why it's so great.
Sure. My Warrior deck is a bit less anti-aggro than Strife Crows, even though I tried to make it a bit anti-aggro. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have Ysera or Nyxia in it, and instead it has Alexstrasza. And one of the dragon cuts was for Arathi Weaponsmith, which is good against aggro. It's also got the Baron Geddon, which I feel like is essential. It's really, really good against... classes such as Shaman, who have a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can remove most of the totems only have 2. I mean, you can remove every single totem, basically, too, with it. It's nice.
I actually believe I got eliminated from the tournament because of Baron Geddon. Pretty rough.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
When was that? Like, what happened, particularly?
So I was playing Shaman against Warrior, which I believe is a good matchup. Yeah. And I deuced that he did not have Baron Geddon or Brawl. So I... put a lot of stuff on the board, and Nimsh played Baron Geddon.
Yeah, that was a really good deduction. Because, you know, the move he made before, like, there's no way he would have made that if he had a brawler or gotten. So he had, and then Trump loaded up the board to
I remember that.
Top decked Armageddon.
Oh, he top decked twice in the row in that game. Or maybe with offset by a turn. I remember that. Yeah, he top decked that Armageddon when you had a, yeah, okay, I remember that. Yeah, that's kind of cool to have Brawl and get in a lot of times, too, against aggro. They're like stoppers. You kind of have two of them that are mid-game that just put an end to it. So it's really, really cool. Wrathy Weaponsmith? So what do you think of Wrathy Weaponsmith, Shrifgro?
I think they're pretty good. I don't know if it's better than Yeti, like, in that order deck, but, I mean, it's really close. So kind of, I guess it's kind of better than Yeti against aggro. Probably and worse against Yeti against like other like really slow control decks like say Handlock. I think Yeti's better than that.
Yeah,
and that's one of the reasons why I picked Handlock against. I think it was Monk when he showed the O'Reilly Weaponsmith in his warrior deck. I decided to pick Handlock against it because I thought it was really weak against like Giants, whereas Yeti would be stronger and he had the Weaponsmith. But I mean, I think it's a really reasonable choice as well for 4-drop slot.
What do you guys think of two brawls in a deck? Especially now that, you know, Pagel and Tank are probably questionable in this deck. Just kind of one of the, you know, potential cards. What do you think of two brawls in a deck?
I don't know. I think two brawls a lot, especially with that effect being, like, you almost never have a game where you actually want to cast two brawls. It's more like you just want to draw it more consistently, maybe, but... Mm-hmm. Still, I don't know. I don't think it's that great, but it can certainly surprise some people. I think it's might be better as a surprise than as a general thing, like to create a strong deck. Because generally, when you brawl once, they don't expect another one. So,
Trump, what do you?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think two brawl might be good in a tournament situation, but probably not as good if you're trying to just go up against the general ladder decks because the second brawl could be dead.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the mage deck, which is like, I guess one that everybody wants to hear a little bit about. So this obviously made some memorable moments, or at least one big, big memorable moment at the tournament when he broke it out against Artosis. So talk to us about the mage deck and I guess why you decided to put Hungry Crab in it particularly, and I guess the rest of it too.
Okay, so this mage deck requires a bit of explanation about the tournament format. Yeah. Like it's been said earlier, but I'll just mention it again. It's you have one secret deck which can be played once in a tournament, and with the 8 players on that list, I figured that one of them would play Murlocs, at least one. Yeah. Turns out that I believe 3 of them, if not 4 of them, are playing it. So I was thinking that I would run this deck to hard counter Murlocs and get something like the highest win percentage you could possibly get against Murlocs, which is I'm going to estimate it at 80%+ because it's got some unfair cards in it, such as Argent Squire, which will trade for 2 Murlocs potentially. The Arcane Missiles will potentially trade for 2 Murlocs. It's got a lot of early game, so you stop the bleeding early. And of course, the cherry on top is the Hungry Crab, which if you play it against the Murloc deck, you win.
All right. I'm just gonna ask you straight up. Did entertainment factor play any involvement in putting Hungry Crab in there?
No, I just wanted to win.
Okay.
So I.
All right.
Although it might have played some.
The show.
I mean, the I came up Trump. With the idea, and it was really cool. And I was like, wait, should I really do this? Maybe I should just duplicate another one of my good decks. But I was like, wait, but I want to play Mage because that's like my. Sort of my trademark deck, and I also want to play Hungry Crab, the hard counter. So, I guess there's a little bit of maybe subconscious showmanship.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
No, it was great, man. It's amazing. It was definitely awesome. Talk to us about Amani Berserker.
Sure, Amani Berserker is just a good card in Mage because it can either be played as a 2-mana 2/3 or a 4-mana 5/2, and it's good to have that flexibility, or you can play it as a 2-mana 2/3, and then later on turn 3, Fire Blast it, and then it trades with a Yeti, which is really good value.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because you obviously beat Artosis's the Murloc deck, but it actually was pretty close to winning the next match, too. So this deck actually has some additional resilience besides just being a completely anti-Murloc slash maybe even anti-aggro deck.
Right, you can sort of tell by the cards that it's not just designed to win only against Murlocs because it has cards that cost 5 plus in it. So, I figured it would have about an 80% win rate against Murlocs and then maybe a 40% win rate against any other deck.
Mm-hmm. The card draw, how's the card draw on this deck? Because without Pagel, does this deck still work decently?
The good news is Mage is one of the classes that benefits most from Pagel being gone because it has repeatable card draw in Acolyte of Pain.
Okay, good point. Good point. Very, very cool. Any comments on this, Strife? what is that, man? What is that laugh?
Yeah, I mean, I think it did its job. So that's what you want.
Well, generally speaking, having a the sacred deck be a pure counter is. Do you think that's the best strategy?
Yeah, kind of actually. Because a sacred deck, you don't actually have to play in every matchup. Mm-hmm. If your sacred deck can get like a very very high map win percentage against a deck that you can choose when you're playing it against, then it'll pretty much at least win one. The only thing I kind of feel is that I think the win percentage with this deck against other decks might be a fair bit lower than 40%, which might be the problem. But if you actually could get like 80% win rate against a deck that you're putting against and maintain like a 40%, then I think it'd be a really good strategy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you also have the situation where it's like, you know, maybe you're just in the last game and there are no other games, right? And you can just break this out and that's game over, right?
Yeah, that's true as well.
Yeah. Just really, really cool. All right, well, whatever it was definitely, I think, the highlight of the tournament for me when I was watching it. I think I was laughing out loud for sure. I was wanting to message you, but I knew I couldn't get a hold of you, you Trump. But it was pretty amazing moment, I think, for everybody watching. All right, guys. Well, why don't we take a quick break, and then we will do some Q&A with you guys, and we'll be right back. Alright guys, we're back. Just a quick little break there. Alright, we're gonna take some of these questions now. Q&A time from you guys. And we are gonna just again sort it by top and take a look at the top. There's a ton of Pagel and Tink questions, guys, and I think we've covered it to a pretty good degree. If there's any questions that I think have a different angle to it, I'll definitely ask it. But okay. So Minos El Oso Essay asks, not a Tink or Pagel question. What do you feel will be the next class to rule constructed, or will Warlock continue to reign supreme until changes are implemented? And I think he's probably referring to this, the Zoo deck, right? Just, I think, being super popular on the ladder and having a lot of success. So I guess maybe let's start off by how do you rank the classes right now on the ladder? Maybe just top three. Trump, you want to, or actually Stripe, you want to start since you...
I guess it would be Druid and Warlock. I'm not sure about the third one. I think the game is, even before the Matt Pagel and Tink Master, it was just really, it was pretty
balanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing was really taking over the game, so it's hard to say something so much stronger to begin with.
Trump, your opinion. Top three.
I will not give a top three because I don't believe there is one.
Wow, okay, great. All right, so I guess that kind of answers that question in a weird way. So it's pretty balanced right now, I guess, is the answer to it. So there's not really another class that's going to rule constructed, at least.
I wanted to say something a bit because the chat and also general forums have been saying like, oh man, there's all these Zoo decks and all these Murloc decks and all these Hunter decks. And I got a net deck one of those. Otherwise, I'm just going to lose. So
that's not true.
For that, I have to say, you see a lot of, like, even if you watch tournaments, you'd notice, like, some top players will lose these rush decks, and that happens. It's because you have to keep your deck a bit balanced against those, but if you run into a lot of them, this is a good place not to net deck and just build, like, a hard anti-aggro deck while still remaining somewhat competitive against control. So the hard, like, if you just go with the stat, say you build a deck that's 70% win rate against aggro and 40% win rate against control-ish decks, then you're going to be looking really good. So I encourage that people try out hating out the aggro with
countering the aggro versus playing aggro. Is that what you're saying? Or
yeah, I mean, if you build a deck that counters aggro, you're going to be really good if the metagame is so aggro heavy as people claim.
Yeah, and there are some classes that are already, you know, I think built to be pretty good against the Zoo deck. I mean, I think the Warrior does pretty good against it if you, you know, have the certain cards in it, and I have to agree with that too. Okay, let's see. Moving on, there's another question about the Zoo, kind of this Zoo deck being really popular, by Al Sawer, I think his name is. It says, with the overflowing amount of Zoo decks in the current meta, what are your thoughts about Blood Knight as a viable counter, or even an inclusion to it with all the Divine Shields in play? Would the trade-off be one big silenceable threat for all the trade value of Divine Shield be worth it considering the already high buffing potential of Zoo?
Let's see, what kind of Divine Shield do they have?
I think
they're using the 3-1 with Divine Shield.
Yeah, Crusader.
Yeah, they have Argent Squire and the 3-1 generally.
So that, I mean, I think it's good.
Yeah, that's four. It's four targets for sure.
I think it's really good against Zoo, and especially if you can find out a way to make the card good in general, such as say running it in something like Paladin deck with your own Argent Squires and the Argent, the 2-mana that gives Divine Shield, for what's called Argent Protector, I think. Mm-hmm. Then you can, you know, that might be a good candidate since it could also steal your own Divine Shield.
Yeah,
and get really big, or also it can, you know, steal theirs. So maybe those decks have a lot of potential right now.
What about even like your rogue deck, Trump, that has like two Argent Squires in it?
Yeah, that'd be a great example of if I expected a lot of Argent Squires or Scarlet Crusaders to just toss in there.
Yeah,
an excellent card.
Okay, let's moving forward. Simplicity 888 asks, Shrivecrow, what player do you fear the most? You must pick one. He's going to say Trump, watch.
I don't know, Seth. I would say...
He fears nobody?
Well, I don't really... I'm not really scared of facing anybody, but... Yeah. I'd say maybe some of like the up and coming ladder players, like even though they might not be as recognized as some of the other players, like I think some of them are really good, basically. Mm-hmm. But I don't really have any specifics other than just the general concept.
Okay, that's a good way to dodge that question.
I don't know.
Let's see. What do you guys? Okay, this is a good question, Zage. We haven't really asked this in a while. What do you guys prefer, going first or second, and why? And what matchups does going first or second make the biggest difference? And he's kind of onto something, because I think each matchup, it can matter, depending on what class you play and that sort of thing. Trump, thoughts on that at all?
Sure. There's two main classes which you want to go second in. That'd be Rogue, since you can use the coin as a combo. Coin SI7 agent on turn two is really strong. And Mage, since you can use the coin as a +1 on your mana worm.
Yes.
Ultimately, this is rather small in consequence. I think Handlock is one of the decks that you want to go first, because then you can tap each turn up to 4. But I think they're rather balanced in terms of each one, and like there's small differences. But overall, it's really close.
Would you want to tap... Is that true? You'd rather go first with Handlock? Because, I mean, coining Coining Twilight Drake on 3 is pretty nice too, right? I don't know. Like, what do you think, Strife? Is that true for you too?
I think I'd rather go first with Handlock.
Okay.
Generally. Just because having to use your coin with Handlock means that you lower your hand size, and that's kind
of
all you want.
Well, of course. I mean,
but it's cool to be able to coin Hellfire, coin Twilight Drake, but it's also cool just to be one man ahead and not have to worry about having that problem as well.
Okay. But just generally speaking to the question, do you like to go first or second?
I like to go first, generally.
Hmm, okay.
Just because I think it's a little bit better most of the time.
Okay, very cool. Let's see, next another tank question here. Bully Man asks, and I think pretty good question for each of you guys. What current cards do you think have high potential for strong play in the future, but no one has found a good fit yet for them? And I'll ask you this, because you seem to be trying out a lot of different cards lately and actually running them too, which is cool.
Well, the Blood Knight mentioned earlier is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mind Control Tech could be really good.
Yes.
I've seen a few people practice that one. Against Zoo, they'll often have 4 cards out also, just because they have so many guys who summon guys. Well, they have one guy who summons a guy, but they have a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Other than that, in general, I think that... I mean, this is a little bit of a pet deck, but I think the entire mage deck and the priest deck haven't been explored enough, and they could be good. That's mm-hmm. all I can say there. They're just all... They're, one, not popular, and two, I would admit that they're difficult to make work. But they could be good.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of... Lots of different applications and utilities in the priest in particular, and we had Amaz on the show last week, right, talking a little bit about it. But I agree with you there. I think more people need to play the priest. You think the mage deck too has been explored? I think since the change, the big changes to Pyro and stuff, I'd probably agree with you. You've probably done the most exploration with it. But in general, you know, the mage has been played probably a lot more, just all the different cards, right? Over the span of Hearthstone, more so than the priest. Do you agree or no? Not.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It has been played a lot pre-nerf. This is post-nerf. It hasn't been very popular.
Yeah. Okay, how about you, Shrife? Anything, card that you think is worth investigating into or has some really good...
That's
potential?
A really hard question since, you know, if we knew, we would be using them already. I guess my best answer to that question would be, even though it's kind of already been said, like Captain Greenskin, like, I don't, it's not really used a lot right now, maybe, but I think it's really strong, especially in Rogue. The effect is like an upgrade, and the card is already like a 5 mana for a 5/4, so it's not even too much underpowered without the effect, and the effect is kind of big, you know, it could easily be worth like 4 power sometimes. So I think it'd be...
Yeah, I'll toss two more cards out there.
Okay.
Just because I remembered them. Ancient of War could be really good.
Oh, yeah.
If you are facing a lot of aggro, and Black Knight isn't that popular, because aggro is really popular, you can't run the Black Knight into aggro. It's like a 6-mana Yeti. So you run that Ancient of War, these aggro decks have no hard removal, so they have to run like 5 or 4 guys into it, or like 2 guys in a Soulfire or something. And the same goes for Earth Elemental. Big Game Hunter isn't that popular, neither is Black Knight, so go and play that on turn 5 and make them 3-for-1 for it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Ancient of War, because I threw it in there just the other night just for the heck of it, because of the Pagel Tank thing, and in preparation for that, I just replaced them with 2 Ancient of Wars, and it was actually really great. It was amazing,
actually. Especially with Tink being gone, or at least, you know, they can't exactly target your Ancient of War.
Right.
They gotta get lucky. Then, that's one more thing to make those big creatures that were really weak to hard removal a little better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, Balthazar asks, what do you think Paladin needs to be able to compete with meta Hunters, Zoos, and Innervated Yetis?
Wow. Paladin?
Yeah. Doesn't Paladin already have, like, something? He's already got some answers with Aldor, right? For at least innervated Yetis. But do you think Paladins, I guess, are... I mean, we already talked about it being pretty balanced, but, you know, talking just, I guess, just very small differences, do you think Paladin's a little bit behind those?
I guess I feel it's weaker than the other classes, but I'm not sure, like, by how... I don't think it's by much, that's why. So it's hard to say, like, what changes they need. I think even a small change would make them, you know, one of the top contenders, and it's still certainly, even now, playable. Like, it's not too weak, I think.
Trump, what's your thoughts?
Well, the good news is the small change happened. Yeah, most decks cannot deal with Tyrion anymore because of the Tink Master. A lot of decks would save the Tink Master against the inevitable Tyrion, since all Paladin decks, most Paladin decks would run that. I think if you want to deal with Rush/Zoo type decks with the Paladin, it might be a good idea to move away from, like, those big endgame Paladins and just put in some small cards in between, like Argent Squire and Knife Juggler, and just match the aggro early game, an Argent Protector, and then in the late game, you have some, not as many as you would usually have, but you have some of the late game to push yourself ahead.
Yeah,
I think that's something that could work.
Argent Protector kind of scales, too, which is nice. Like, once you get to those mid-game, late-game units, you can just throw on that Divine Shield and it makes it crazy, makes those units even crazier. But yeah, I think so, too. I think Paladin has a lot of utility. It's just everybody's just been using it in the same way for a long time now. So it'd be cool to see. All right, what's next? Okay, it says Yeezy HS asks, kind of a little bit similar, but as meta inevitably shifts back and forth, the decks nowadays are starting to look similar to the ones that players played at the first two seasons of ESG and Fight Night. Do you think that for Druids, the Sunwalkers, Ancient of Lores, Wild Growth, and Starfall are going to make a comeback? Is Shaman one of the best decks on the ladder now that Control Warlock and Control Warrior received major buffs? Okay, so first question. Do you think that Druids are going to start running Sunwalkers again? And, I mean, Ancient of Lores, like, we've always run them, right? Wild Growth and Starfall? Starfall, for sure, I think at one point was being run all the time.
Well, Starfall was run because of, you know, that was back pre Blood Imp nerf, and the Blood Imp was completely warping the meta with how strong that kind of the original Warlock aggro or control slash whatever it was, right? Nowadays with Druids more being mid-range, you wouldn't run any of those cards in mid-range because you can't, right? You can't go for a late game with like a Druid, with these Druid decks. They're not like the old Druid control decks. Whether Druid control can make a comeback, I'm not sure. I mean, I think Druid control has a hard time against Druid midrange, just because of how strong like Force Nature and Savage are. Like, I've played Druid control a couple times, maybe recently or you know, not too recent, but like after people started using Force Nature and Savage Roar, and I always felt like I couldn't really do anything if they had the combo on turn 9. Like, I'd always be at the mercy of them not having it, you know? Like, if they do have it, I'd just always die. So I'm not sure. It's just like early game, your stuff's kind of like similar to their stuff, and so like maybe you might take some extra damage because you have a little bit more high mana cards, so you might lose a little bit on tempo early, and then if they just have the combo on turn 9, you're probably gonna die. So I don't.
Okay. So you don't see them coming back.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't really run Sunwalker and say Ancient of War in a more mid range druid. It's more like a control druid, right? So maybe Ancient of War, but definitely not Sunwalker. But I could see other classes using Sunwalker more, maybe like other control decks, such as maybe even Warrior control, if they need that kind of effect.
Mm-hmm. Right. Trump, your thoughts?
Oh, man. I guess I said it earlier. I do like some of the old throwbacks, like Ancient of War and Earth Elemental. So that's about it.
Yeah, but not any of the... Not Sunwalker or...
Sunwalker's okay. I think Sunwalker might be not so good, because the Zoo deck has a lot of small guys, and the Murloc decks have a lot of small guys, so the Divine Shield is really easily just killed by like one attack or two attack.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll take a couple more, and then we'll call it a day. Okay, so... All right, so Flawless5 asks, this is mainly for Strife, but I mean, obviously for both of you guys. Do you have any advice for deck building for high-ranked players? How do you know which cards, I'm just filling in the blanks, to add in order to counter a specific deck? It seems like the best players always know what's missing in the deck in order to make it viable. So, yeah, Strife. I guess, can you explain, I guess, any advice on... I think he's pretty much asking how to counter specific things or when building a deck.
I mean, a big part of it is just, like, understanding, like, the interactions between the cards. I mean, I've played so much Hearthstone that I kind of grok it, you know, where I can't... It's like a term, but I kind of grok it where I kind of understand like the implications of adding cards and removing cards. So, I mean, I guess if you just play enough and think about the game a lot, like basically, like think about the game a lot. Like when, like I've thought about like Hearthstone so much, especially when I played like 10 hours a day a lot, like I would, you know, finish Hearthstone, then like go to bed and think about Hearthstone,
dream
like
about it.
As I'm sleeping. Yeah, it's like, and if you do that stuff a lot, you're just gonna understand it more and more. So it's not really any easy advice on how to, you know, build a good deck or see how that stuff works, other than just to be able to just think about the game a lot, basically, and not just play. You know, not just only play, like even when you're not playing.
Right. Trump, advice for him.
So, the good news is you can, it basically comes with experience, and unusually enough, the arena experience helps out quite a bit because you get to try out a lot of lesser used cards and see if they're good in specific situations. But ultimately, if you play a lot of constructed and you try out a few cards here and there, it's also a big deal. Turns out that, even though, like, say that Shaman deck as an example between Strife and I, we probably share about 24, maybe 25 of the same cards, and yet they play so differently.
Yeah.
So,
six cards can, would be a big difference. I mean, five, six
yeah,
cards.
I mean, that's
a big difference, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. That does change a lot of the flavor.
You're going to say something, Shrey?
Oh, no. I was just agreeing. Like, five card difference is a lot, basically, on how the decks can play how to there.
I guess adding to what Strife said, I think in general, maybe just looking at the game like more from an analytical standpoint, like really just analyze the game, you know, like, and you know, look at some games from these guys when they played, I don't know, ESGN or C-Story Cup, and really, you know, take a look at each situation, take a look at really how the viability of each card is, more so than just like going and playing decks. You know, you can do that too, but I think you might be able to reduce some time if you actually really sit down there and you know, try to figure things out by just looking at data and that sort of thing. Might help
you also just
understand.
And this goes through a bit of card playing experience, but you get a feel for what a good card is just because of stats. Like, for example, well, there's a 1-mana card. It's a 2/1. Well, that sucks, but it's a 2/1 with a benefit. Well, that might be good. And then, like, if you count each stat as a point, then you can see how someone might have thought, oh, wow, Shield Bearer could be really good. It's like 4 points for one card, and it has taunt, which is probably worth a point. Like, there's still the old point calculations. And that's not something that I would have seen. But now that it's out there, everyone's like, oh, yeah, Shield Bearer, that's obvious. Mm-hmm. And
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, technically, not having one attack is like a -1 point. It's like a -1 point if it's zero, in my opinion.
I mean, but, okay, so let's talk about Shield Bearer with you, Strife. I mean, that was a big discussion probably like a week ago, I think, in the Reddit, subreddit. And I think, you know, Raynaud kind of, I think, brought it to light just with the, I think, his version of the Zoo deck at the time. And I think it is serving its purpose. I mean, I think it's, you know, just throwing a body in there that allows you to protect your weak damage minions or you know, allowing you to kind of get more units on the board.
Yeah, like I said, that deck is really based around control decks trying to remove their creatures with spells a lot, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's why the deck is so good against, like, say, even stuff like generally warrior control, shaman control, or something like that.
Yeah.
That's why, like, Giants has such a good matchup against it, you know, because Giants doesn't care if you throw down one or two creatures protected by a shield there. They're just going to ignore it and do their own thing. Yeah. Whereas other decks where they're having to remove all their creatures, well, you can think how hard it is to remove a shield there, you know, because that's just what it does. Like, it's just hard to remove.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So. Okay, cool. One more question. Okay, we'll ask a Hunter question here. Thoughts on the Hunter control deck, and what would the key cards for this deck be? And we saw Hunter, so obviously Hunter aggro, everybody knows the Hunter aggro, but, you know, I thought I felt like the Hunter control was making a little bit of a, you know, just there was a tiny push from a Hunter control for a little bit, but now I don't hear it at all anymore. So what are your thoughts on Hunter control, Trump? Can it be viable right now?
Yeah, it can be viable. In fact, I think it is viable.
Okay. Talk to me about some of the key cards.
The key cards would be Deadly Shot, which is like a 3-mana assassinate. It's amazing. It's got the Scar, which is like rivaling Fire Elemental in terms of goodness. High Main, or Savannah High Main, for those who don't know the lingo. And they've got, as usual, the Doggy Unleash and like the combo still. So they basically play as your usual Rush Hunter deck, except with value cards as opposed to cards that try to hit once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Strife?
I think the problem with Hunter, it's like pretty strong. Like sometimes when I play against Hunter control, I just like lose and I feel hopeless. But I think the problem with Hunter control is like they have to tune it really specific against one deck. Because a lot of their cards like aren't very good overall, you know. So like I think like sometimes when I lose, say, Druid versus Hunter control, like when they're using like two Deadly Shots or something, like that's like one of the cards that's like extremely good against like in some matchups and extremely bad in others. And I think they have like a lot of cards like that, where they might tune it one way. Like for example, sometimes when I've had trouble Druid versus Hunter control, I found out that the people I'm playing, they don't even use Explosive Trap, you know? And that's like one of the best cards against aggro, but they're not using it because they just want to beat Druid. So I think that's kind of the problem with Hunter control. Like, I've never seen a Hunter control that's really solid that can do pretty good against everything, you know?
Yeah. What do you think are the key... So besides Deadly Shot, what do you think are key cards for the Hunter if they were to build a control deck?
There's a lot, but, you know, Explosive Trap, Deadly Shot, Multi-Shot, Explosive Shot.
Removal, basically. I mean, that's pretty much what that...
Especially Savannah High Main as well. I mean, those are key cards.
What do you think are the key traps besides... I mean, do you like Misdirection? Do you like Freezing Trap?
I don't like Misdirection, I think, for Hunter Control. I like Freezing Trap and Explosive Trap.
Okay.
I think it's possible you run zero traps. That would be a way to go to. And perhaps you could make it a beast theme since Houndmaster is really, really good.
It's a beast theme. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the High Main's obviously a beast too, so there's a lot of targets, I think, from the High Main if he doesn't get silenced too. But okay, guys. Well, I think, why don't we wrap the show? Thanks for all your questions just from the community. And again, you know, hopefully we got to as many, or at least the questions that you wanted to hear. We did skip some because they all had to do with NatPagel and Tink, and I think we covered some of it during the show. So forgive me if I didn't actually go through all of the ones at the top there. But why don't we wrap up, guys? I think it was a great show. Always fun having you on here, Strife, and of course Trump back from the last 2 weeks. So really, really great having you back, of course. But you want to do some shout-outs? Thank yous, Strife?
I don't want to do any shout-outs.
Okay. All right. No problem. Trump?
Sure. I'd like to shout-out Hungry Crab for giving me $1,000.
Yes. Yes. That's value right there, man. How much money do you think it costs to get you Hungry Crab? $1. $2. Or one arena run or something like that. Yeah, probably. No, really cool. Is that it?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, big shout out obviously to you guys again. And for those of you that are watching today, big shout out to you guys for that. And a lot of people in the chat asking about Crip. So the thing is Crip is still part of Valuetone. For comparison, it's totally part of Valuetone. It's just now that he has a different schedule, he's over in Greece. We have to figure out the times for Valuetone because he can't do it during this time anymore. Crip's still going to be part of all the arena-centric Valuetone episodes, which we'll be doing some more soon, very, very soon. And we'll probably have to do it earlier, and I'll probably tell you the times whenever we do that. But just to kind of give you a heads up, people wondering where Crip is and all that stuff, that's where he is. VODs for Valuetone, if you missed any of it today or any of the past episodes, you can find on youtube.com/ChamMV. I'll have this VOD up maybe a little bit later today just because you guys always want audio versions too now, so I'm trying to get audio versions too at the same time. So expect it really, really soon, and I think that's going to be it. Well, follow this channel if you enjoy Valuetone or any of my shows, and Filters, Wednesday Night Sprites, any of that good stuff. It's a great way to get notified whenever we go live, and yeah, that's going to be it. Oh, follow us on Twitter too, @TrumpSC, @StrifeCrow, and @ChamMV. But for StrifeCrow, Trump, and ChamMV, we'll see you next time. Later.